Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Recovery Radio program on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Pullman. Recovery Radio is recorded live at the Latah Recovery Center, located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addiction and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, strength, insight, and hope for continued recovery. I am Radio Johnny. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic, recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And I got a couple of things of interest on the calendar for you. Today, November 21st, from 4 to 6 p.m., there's going to be a potluck dinner themed on Thanksgiving, of course, which is coming up shortly, from 4 to 6 p.m. And also at this event, you can pick up a tag for the LRC's Christmas Giving Tree. If you can't make it there and want to get a tag, you can stop by the LRC or you can give them a call at 208-883-1045 and talk to one of our gracious volunteers and they will tell you how you can pick up one of those tags. You can also go to the LRC website for a listing of all the events coming up and meeting schedules for like AA, NA, Sexaholics Anonymous, all sorts of things that we put on for the community. And today, on today's show, I have two guests, which is exceptional. I have Vivian, who is an intern here at LRC from Washington State University. I almost said UW. That's very bad. I apologize. And we also have Jade, who is our intern from the University of Idaho. Go Vandals. Okay, so who are these people and what do they do? So first of all, welcome Vivian. Welcome Jade.
Thank you.
I'll start with Jade, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, how you got here, and what you're doing at the university to make your life more exciting.
Okay. My name is Jade. I am a current student at the University of Idaho, anticipating my graduation this May with my majors in sociology, psychology, as well as my minors in Spanish, addictions, and what I'm doing at the LRC right now is an internship with U of I. So far, I have gotten the opportunity to work alongside the peers who are in recovery currently, whether that's by supporting them, being actively at the Center for Community Engagement. When peers walk in, I'm here to facilitate whatever they are looking for, as well as we got the opportunity to attend in mental health court and drug court to understand that side of recovery.
Fantastic. And Vivian, tell us a little bit about you before you run away.
Yeah.
I keep teasing you about that. I should stop.
No, you don't worry about it. So I go to Washington State University. I'm originally from Seattle and I've been here going on 5 years now, which is wild to think. I graduated in spring with a human development degree. And wanted to pursue avenues to just explore what I could do with that degree, and that led me to the LRC. Primarily, what I've been doing here and has to do with crisis work and a lot with the crisis center that is just next door. Getting to learn what that looks like, very on 24/7, learning from some of the best here. And yeah, after the LRC, I'll be pursuing a job with a local church in Pullman. So I'm really excited. I think a lot of those tie together, just relational things that I've learned here, I'll take with me. So,
fantastic. Well, that sounds like a fun way to kind of use your degrees towards bettering the local community. I'm glad you're staying local. That's an awesome thing. I think I'll go to Jade here. Now, are you working? Let me back up. Many people may not know that the Latah Recovery Center partners with the Idaho Health District to be the personnel at the Rural Crisis Center Network, which is next door to the LRC. And what that is that people are in crisis, mental health crisis, for example, suicidal. They can contact, they can walk in the door at the LRC during business hours. Somebody will greet them, get them in touch with one of the LRC people that mans the network side. And they will start to do what's called an intake. At that same time, they'll contact, I believe it's still Scott Community Care, yep, for a professional to come over and do an assessment of the mm-hmm. individual. If they can be stabilized, so to speak, they can stay at the crisis network. We have resting mats. They're not beds. They're resting mats.
Very important distinction.
Yes. And they can stay for up to 23 hours and 59 minutes. If they need to stay longer, we can walk them out, walk them back in, start the clock over again. Also, you know, if they just need some heavy counseling, we can get that to them right away and they can go about their way. And if they're in a really dangerous place for themselves, they can be referred to you know, medical treatment for that situation. So our interns typically are involved with the rural network as well as with the LRC side. And it's very complimentary because somebody comes in crisis over here, saying not about suicide, just about some sort of life disaster, and they're losing their mind, so to speak, about it. Can bring them over to the other side, and you guys would interdict with them there. Mm-hmm. So have you, Vivian, had that experience with somebody who came in on a crisis and then transitioned over? And what did that look like?
Yeah, I think the really sweet part is that being connected to both sides, both as an intern, but also just everyone who's on our rotation call, is that you just know the resources really well, both the ones that we provide and also ones that are just around the community. And a lot of the times that's what it looks like is, I think, a successful, whatever, an hour, 2 hours, however long they're here, it would be some sort of connection to a local resource. And I think the sweet part is that we get to see that progression of recovery and not, doesn't feel like they walk out the door and we'll never know what happens again. But I think the continuation of knowing that we really care that it's more than just the 3 hours or the 5 hours or the 10 hours that they were here, but just the lifelong continuation of that recovery, whatever, from whatever it may be that they have come in with. So, yeah.
Right. Right. So you have seen that mm-hmm. happen here before and some yeah. success stories in that?
Yeah. I think recently just had a lot of my experience has been with the population of students at U of I. And I think seeing them get connected to things like Vandal Recovery, having peer support and peer coaching there, having people that they can meet on a regular basis that are have very much of an open door policy to them. We see them come through the door. We see them come for game nights and build community here. And that relationship that already exists with the university is really sweet. I think specifically for the students, seeing that be an outlet for them on campus. Yeah, which has been really awesome and really celebratory.
And Jade, I would imagine, you know, you're dealing with students on the U of I side. Do we ever see people from WSU? I know they have their own COOS for Recovery program over there, but do you ever get a chance to interact with them?
I've explored the Vandal Recovery Center mm-hmm. On campus.
Yeah.
Run by like Steven and the new Vandal coordinator.
Right, Margaret, who's yeah. just coming on. We're gonna interview her in a couple of weeks once she gets her feet under.
Yeah. As my role for more as a facilitator in recovery, I think I'm just more as a peer here to support the community inside the center.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I said, I don't really get to experience what Vivian experiences because she is in the more of the crisis center side.
Mm-hmm. So your side of it relates more to work with peers and the recovery coaches and getting people connected to the system that way. Do you do direct work with the peers that come in?
So I am currently an intern with U of I, and the program for internships is pretty well thought out. Vivian's here about like 14 hours a week. I am here 7 hours a week, so I don't have very much room to explore those avenues on top of what I'm already completing in my undergrad experience. But when I graduate this spring, I hope to further be integrated in this community and spend more time at the LRC, because I do hope to, in the future, become a licensed clinical psychologist, and I hope in the future that I can come back and help this community, whether that's just giving my services. So I'm pretty far from where Vivian's at right now, just here being kind of a support system and a cheerleader for those in recovery right now. And just talking with peers is a big thing I really do, is talking to them about their day so that they, when they spend their time here, it's a safe, non-judgmental environment, as well as an environment where they can get some sort of community and support.
Right, like, right. I know they do. I mean, we have computers out there in the main office space where they can do everything from job search to play chess, or, you know, just occupy their time not thinking about, you know, if they're in addiction or if they're having behavioral health issues. Just having a nice, safe place. And you mentioned someone to talk to. That's awesome. And yo hablo español, so we don't have a huge Spanish-speaking population in Moscow, but it does exist. You know, so that's, I mean, to have that plus at the front door, and that's awesome. You know, I wish we had Slovakian speaking, you know, Chinese speaking, Mandarin and Sichuan.
Got Portuguese, you know, over here.
Oh, what's that?
I speak Portuguese.
Oh, Portuguese.
Yeah.
That was the most interesting language. I had some friends who were Portuguese, well, first generation American, but of course spoke Portuguese at home. And some of the sounds they make sound like, you know, like something wrong with your throat. Like you're there you go. I mean, you know, if we get some Portuguese people wandering here, we got that covered too for a little while. Bounce back to you, Vivian. You look forward to going to work for a local church over in Pullman. Yeah. What sort of work what are you trying to integrate with what you've learned here with your experience over there?
Yeah. I think just kind of starts with the reason why I decided to do an HD, a human development degree, is I'm a super relational person. I love people and prefer to do jobs that require sitting with them and talking to them. And so I think being here, and specifically being on the crisis rotation, I think when learning to be an active listener and also just a good question asker is huge, whether it's like 5 o'clock in the afternoon or 2 a.m, like having your brain ready to really be engaged and be fighting for that person, whether you met them 5 minutes ago or you've known them for a while. And I think a lot of my job in Pullman is interacting with college students as they go through the most formative years of their life, like 18 to 22. You're asking some really big questions and discovering who you are and what you're going to contribute to the world. So I think I'm excited to have that mindset of being able to lock in and ask questions that are insightful, but also just listen and to be a friend, to be someone that's like on their level. Very new grad, so I think a lot of the things that people are going through, I feel very near and dear to. I'm really thankful for that opportunity, and also just a broader perspective on the world. I think I grew up not anywhere in like Pullman. I grew up in very white suburbia. And so I think to be exposed to a new demographic of people and that be so those stories be so human to me has been really special. Yeah. I'm really thankful for that.
Yeah, we all come from different cultural mm-hmm. backgrounds. I tend to look at it based on culture rather than race. It's just me. But people from all over the planet come to both U of I and mm-hmm. WSU, maybe even more so over there. And it's pretty amazing how the community can bond together and, beyond just a level of acceptance, mm-hmm. How people enjoy integrating into this American lifestyle mm-hmm. and what goes on here. We had some people stay with us who were from Russia. They were immigrating and they just stayed with us for a couple of days, fresh off the airplanes before they could get into their housing, and we took them to Winco. Mm. Oh my God. They almost lost their minds. Look at all the produce, it's just, and you can buy as much as, you can buy as much as you want, Oh my God, wild. The meat, it's pink, it's not great, it was crazy how, we can have an effect on people like mm-hmm. that here.
Yeah.
But also, that brings in problems as well, adjusting to that.
Mm-hmm.
And college students, I think a great point you made was, they're in their formative years asking big questions. And one of the biggest ones is, why am I here?
Yeah.
And why is this so hard? Why is my life so hard right now? They're being challenged in a lot of ways, they're away from home for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's no adult supervision except themselves. And that can get you into a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Having that unlimited freedom can be a bit crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So having someone they can talk to and just listen to them, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, Jade does here. Mm-hmm. just listening to people when they come in, being a cheerleader. That's a great way to look at what you can do here. I've taken the peer training, of course, a long mm-hmm. time ago. And even though I'm not down here volunteering all the time, because I'll do this radio program and then I'll go home and spend 2 hours editing out all the filthy words you guys spit out. No. But I'll work on it and get it ready to go for broadcast. So I spend a lot of time doing that. But when I am here, I may come down for meetings or something like that, or just check in once in a while, talk mm-hmm. to Daryl about something. I'll sit and talk with people that are just hanging out, enjoying that safe space and listen to what's going on with them. And that can make a big impression on them.
Mm-hmm.
There was one fellow who was really troubled and still really stuck in his addiction, but trying to come in here and just trying to figure things out. And I talked to him on several occasions, and about after his biggest problem was amphetamines and alcohol in combination. He showed up in an AA meeting, and I'm like, oh, what brings you here? And he goes, I was thinking about what we talked about, and you seem to be doing okay, having suffered a similar issue. So, and he's still sober and active in the recovery community today, without naming names. You've probably seen him here. No doubt you've seen him here. So it's encouraging to know that just being here, is so huge. And like I said, Jade, I'm sure you've had, can you relate any stories about people you've talked to here that you feel like you may have made an impact on?
I guess one thing that does stand out to me is just the things that are at risk when you are not, when someone has not decided to be in recovery, whether that's the risk of potential overdose. So that's one thing that's concerning to me.
Mm-hmm.
More specifically, because I have had someone in my family not know what was in a substance and then has overdosed.
Mm-hmm.
So that impact greatly makes me appreciate being here
mm-hmm.
to support the individuals that are here.
Mm-hmm.
I guess just what things that could be at risk if they weren't here is frightening. So I'm really thankful for this. Could you repeat the question?
Well, I think you pointed it out, your experience with people who, are in what is called pre-contemplation human, which is a lot of the people that we see here.
Yes.
Well, and contemplative as well, and as well as actually active in recovery. But you had a family member that was a victim of an overdose.
Yes.
Were they successfully revived or did they pass?
They passed away. More detail, they were not an addict, more so, I'd say, a partially dependent.
Mm-hmm.
But they were 20 years old and were out with their friends. And so the message of that is you don't know what's going to be out there in the drugs you are might be thinking you're taking.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had thought it was just a pill, but it was laced with fentanyl. So you don't know what's on the streets.
Right.
He did pass away, and that left a huge impact on my family, as well as I. And with that experience, I just wanted to pursue understanding the realm of addictions, and that's why I'm pursuing my minor in addictions as well, to hopefully support my family members and other people I can along the journey.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, no, I totally get what you're talking about. I mean, fentanyl is a scourge of the universe right now, and it's in everything. I think I read some data from the DEA that almost every substance that they confiscated at the street level was tainted with fentanyl to some extent. And stuff coming in from overseas is, all tainted with it because it's so easy to make, it's so inexpensive, and such a small amount goes such a long way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very sorry to hear that, it impacted your family like that. My father passed away. Both my parents were active alcoholics. My father, up until the time he passed away from cirrhosis, which is a direct result of his drinking and lifestyle. My mother got into sobriety, Alcoholics Anonymous, after a gastric hemorrhage that she managed to survive. And she was sober the last 10 years of her life. But her addiction to smoking was eventually what got hers. She had small cell carcinoma. But, having that background, and once I got into recovery, I realized for me how important it was for me to, at 40 years old, to do what I could to, help people in recovery. Mm-hmm. Again, my program is Alcoholics Anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So working a 12-step program with people is what I do. Getting sober at 40, I was like a little bit past the opportunity to go to university and study, which I would have loved to do, but two things holding me back. One thing is when it comes to study, I'm very undisciplined, and I've hated school since the day I started at 5 years old. I think it's the constrained environment, but somehow I became an electrical engineer with only 5 years of junior college. I didn't get much out of that. Well, I got a wife out of it, so there was the upside there.
Love that.
But being able to use my experience to help others is a big deal. And understanding, like you said, Jade, that's huge for you to be able to interact with other people and to be able to say, yeah, I understand, even though I haven't had the addicted experience. I've had the experience of what addiction does to the people around it.
Yeah, I think that's been one big thing is kind of having that early experience surrounded by that environment, it kind of does facilitate my interests in a way to, yes, support these populations. But on top of that, I'm just hoping that I can contribute some other way to help. So one thing I really want to contribute is like a little pamphlet discussing how there are barriers to recovery and how there's a life beyond just recovery, whether that's, you know, completing a GED, completing secondary education, finding a certificate, or just finding something that instills enrichment and passion. So I'm just hoping to create a pamphlet for the center, and it's in progress right now, detailing, you know, why someone might benefit from achieving something they're interested in,
right,
and what barriers are there, because when someone's in recovery and trying to achieve something on top of being in recovery, it might be a little more challenging. So just
Quite often, well, we see a lot of people in recovery that are coming out of the legal system.
Yes.
And one huge barrier to recovery is the challenges faced getting employment. We're pretty fortunate in Moscow that there are a lot of what we refer to as felony-friendly employers. Yeah. Although they're not typically jobs that are near the top of the food chain, you know, they're entry-level jobs, you know, and might be in fast food or, you know, service work, that sort of thing. And, you know, that's one kind of barrier that I recognize and see all the time. But the other thing you said that really fascinated me was, you know, just their interests. I mean, everybody has dreams, right?
Yeah.
Everybody is passionate about something. And, you know, the addiction or, you know, the inability through a behavioral health issue to be able to work in that or achieve that can be a huge barrier. I mean, if I was drinking right now, I can promise you I would not be here doing this interview, because it would be interfering with my ability to drink. Or there would be a glass of whiskey here rather than a Coca-Cola, right?
Yeah.
So what are some of the, I'll jump back to you, Jade, what are some of the things that you see that are barriers, as you call them?
Yeah, I really enjoyed that you mentioned the chance to get a good job opportunity after being released from the criminal justice system.
Right.
So that is one barrier, because how are you going to afford an education if you were... So one thing I'm noticing is, you know, you're in recovery, you're going to do the things to get you where you're envisioning, whether that's getting a job, getting an apartment, just getting a stable environment set up for yourself. Okay, well, my question is, after that, what else is next? Because I believe that these folks have the potential to do more, but right, the barriers are, you know, having to work full time. Where is their time to achieve what else they might want to? So I'm wanting to create this pamphlet to find those resources to help them with those barriers, whether that's funding. So there's this TRIO program, and you can become a part of a TRIO program, and they help you get funds for those who are in the criminal justice system so that they can pursue higher education. But I still need to research all those avenues and resources. But I'd say other barriers are the battle of, like you said, battling whatever symptoms they may be facing from their behavioral health condition.
Right.
In general, more barriers are a lack of support, because this group is often stigmatized.
Yeah.
And when you're faced up against that pressure, it just is a setback for one. So I just really like to advocate for that population. And I guess to further answer your question, other barriers I'm not aware of, so I'd like to move forward with interviewing some peers here to find out what barriers they're facing, because, like, I'm not someone who has experienced an addiction, but like we mentioned earlier, I have grown up around those experiencing an addiction. And with that insight, I see those individuals as more than their struggles and whatnot. So.
Cool. Well, maybe Vivian can educate us on some barriers that maybe you have seen or are familiar with for people wanting to achieve. You know, we're going to make the assumption that they've already made a decision to get into recovery and are, you know, actively pursuing some sort of recovery program, whether it's a 12-step, smart recovery, you know, something that we're working on here. And I think basically our recovery program is almost, it's based on smart goals? Principles. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the biggest one is, and what I think what fuels people, but also what can hold people back is just like the pre-existing, like letting the past haunt you. I think a lot of the times there is this preconceived notion, if it hasn't worked before, it's not going to work ever. And so oftentimes people who come through the crisis side have tried before and have a lot of experience. If it's with mental health, have had like inpatient, outpatient experience and counselors and all the things with taking different types of medicines, all those things. And then also with addiction, you see, which I've seen less of, but also that idea of like it's not the first time that they've tried. And so I think that first step of wanting it to be different and how is it going to be different, and it laying it out is a big one of the motivation to desire and what is going to fuel that, and reminding yourself of if there's family, if there's friends, if there's a job, if there's opportunity, if there's a dream, letting those things be motivating factors. And because a lot of the times in the moment it feels really hopeless, and you get almost blinders, like it's hard to see the bigger picture, and you see a day in front of you, 24 hours, and not a month, a year, and that can feel really daunting. So yeah, that felt really broad, but
yeah, no,
so it came to mind. Yeah,
I actually I'm there with you on that. I mean, when I first came into AA, I'm like, I'm never going to be able to drink again. I'm never going to have fun ever again. Which of course I was wrong. But yeah, the idea that I already tried that and it didn't work, you know, that self-sabotage mode that people get into, you know, well, you know, I would try that, but I really just think it's too hard. You know, it's like, well, I'll apply for this job, but I know they're not going to call me back. And when they do, it's like, oh, well, I have an interview, but I know they're not going to hire me. You know, that self-defeating thing that really comes from those experiences in addiction. Now, I have a friend who has a behavioral health condition. He has schizoaffective disorder, and he's a little bit bipolar as well. So he's a double winner. And I sponsored him in AA until I realized that that's not his behavioral health problem is what drove his drinking, not just a straight up case of alcoholism. And you know, I counsel with him all the time because I'm one of the few people he trusts, which is important with people with schizophrenia, because they're paranoid and grow to a point where they trust no one. But, you know, I've been able to, you know, counsel with him as he goes through different phases. This for the last few years, he's been living on the street by preference, just because that is what his disease has told him is a safe place for him, which is counterintuitive, of course. Living on the street is incredibly dangerous. But now he's progressing. He's in transitional housing now, back on the East Coast. He seems to be doing much better. And to land the plane here, a lot of what I talk about with him is saying, well, just because it didn't work out before doesn't mean you should just not try again. You know, I remind him of those experiences he had where he was successful, doing something outside his comfort zone, we'll call it. And so, yeah, that's very important, you know, to be able to be there. You know, and I'm sure Vivian, you're Jade, you will, you know, encounter many, many interesting barriers while you were here. You know, what Vivian just outlined, almost a defeatist attitude. What's the point in trying? I know that drove my alcoholism for a while. You know, it's like, okay, I'm not going to drink today, and I'll white knuckle it for a few hours, and it's like the days turn into crap. I feel horrible. Oh, what the hell? I may as well just drink.
Yeah,
you know, I'm useless the way I feel right now. So yeah, you know, I sabotaged myself in my addiction, and what made me think when I got into recovery that that was going to go away right away? You know, I initially thought, well, once I cut out the drinking, everything's going to be unicorns and rainbows.
Yeah.
No, it turns out it was going to be a lot of hard work. You know, the step work that I had to do in my program, you know, set me up to crush all those old ideas, which is why it worked for me and why, if anyone's ever interested, I'm always willing to talk to them about it. But I also recognize, and it even says in our literature, we're not the only path.
Yeah.
You know, I know at least a half a dozen people who have found their recovery through a religious organization, you know, and a belief in, you know, a spiritual belief through an organized religion.
Yeah.
That's great, you know. I know we're secular here. Pretty much, but it doesn't mean we don't support somebody who is. And something Jay brought up, you know, that support system of family, of being there, and of other people in a fellowship. And it can be an informal fellowship like the LRC. I mean, peers bump into each other here all the time. I've seen relationships grow. Some healthy, some maybe not so healthy, but regardless, you know, they people can get a chance to come in here and see that they're not the only one. So something I wanted to give you guys an opportunity to do is just kind of talk about reaching out and what your feelings are about doing that. Jade, you were starting to share about the importance of knowing, you know, acknowledging that something's going on. Why don't you expand on that a little bit?
So I guess one thing I wanted to mention was that on top of being in recovery, whether one... So I know the definition of recovery is you are in recovery if you say you are. But aside from that, in the pre-contemplation stage where you may be deciding, hey, is recovery the thing for me? Do I currently have a problem? Aside from that, I'm more concerned about the risks with substance use, whether that's, while we don't have any needle exchange programs currently at the Lehtar Recovery Center, we do have ways to, for preventative measures for preventing HIV, STD, we offer condoms, we offer resources for testing, because I know that is commonly a stigmatized thing, which prevents people from wanting to go get those resources that they may need. In addition to that, we do offer Narcan, and I think that it's important to have access to Narcan in case the self or someone else, and for others who they may know, just... Because I know I previously mentioned that I'm worried about the cases of overdose, so I'm really advocate for grabbing a grabbing a box of Narcan in case someone maybe.
Well, sure. That's you're going to people who are using typically hang out with people who are using. You know, rarely do they go alone into a secret area. The story you told of the family member, Jade, where they were with other people. You know, had somebody in that group had Narcan you know, that the risk would have been mitigated. So yeah, no, I follow what you're saying. And Vivian, what's your thoughts looking forward for people in pre-contemplation or et cetera?
Yeah, I think just to know that the resources are here. I think prior to pursuing internships, I wasn't aware of the multitude of people invested, one, into a place like the LRC, but also just what the community has to offer so much. And you can find your place, whether it be through church groups, whether it be through not, through like resources we have here, other local things. I think they all, like, they exist in an abundant amount, especially for what feels like a really small town. So I think it's really beautiful to see that, how there's so many avenues, mm-hmm. and your path and your journey to recovery is going to look different. And I think we really do believe in that and try to cater to that. So, yeah.
Well, if you look at the when you come in here, there's a wall mm-hmm. that has, there must be at least a couple hundred brochures on there of resources available in this area. And a lot of them are free.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are counseling services that you can get involved in. You know, if you're in trouble with the law, there's also, you know, people don't realize there are resources within the criminal justice system in this town. We had a judge here named Stegner years ago, who is now a Supreme Court justice in Idaho. He and a couple other people were responsible for bringing those specialty courts into Latah County.
That's awesome.
And getting them approved by the state, so that we do have the mental health courts and the drug court and family courts. But the, you know, we see a lot of people go through the drug court. Our Denise here is a successful graduate of that program. And I know lots of people in recovery who have made it through. And that's, I mean, on top of it's wonderful for them, it's also wonderful for the community, you know, because we've got one less addict, you know, climbing in your window when you're gone, taking your TV set or whatever. Although with big screen TVs, that must be really hard. It's not like the old days where it's just 25-inch color, you could run with it. So anyway, well, you know, we're just about up against the clock here. So I want to thank you both for sharing your information. And it's nice meeting you. And, and goodbye, Vivian.
Goodbye. Not for long. Cindy refuses to believe that I'm going to come in and visit. And I will.
All right.
I'll visit.
we will hold you to it. And I hope you can bring some new resources in as well. Mm-hmm. That would be awesome. And Jade, really looking forward to watching you grow, waiting to see your brochure once you get your head all wrapped around it and get your information set.
Yeah, thank you for that.
That's going to be awesome. So I'm going to close it out with my usual, you know, if you think you have a problem with substances or behavioral health, you do.